Assemble Task Force X. We have another suicide mission.
Yes!
Joker's done with 30 bombs. He did somewhere and got it.
Telling me where it is.
Aren't you the good to save that?
Task Force X is locked and loaded.
He's history's bloodiest tyrant. Find him. I'll slice a year off all your sentences.
I didn't sign up to deal with an immortal butcher.
You didn't sign up for anything. One more thing. This one's off the grid. You'll be dealing with me directly and only me.
Blow me up now.
I don't take orders from murderers.
Not even if I said please?
Keep your heads on the mission if you want to keep them on your shoulders.
I think we're being summoned.
If you're in.
Ah, great. Only 87 more suicide missions to go.
Tell me about your first exposure to the Suicide Squad. You actually read the comics, you watch the cartoons. What do you think was your first exposure to them?
Read the comics.
And now starting, which comics though? When did you start on the comic?
Probably 5 years ago, maybe more. Fix It ended up loaning me like the early runs. And then I think I bought the graphic, not the trade paperbacks for the newer series in the 2010s. Look it up right now. From the Ashes was the first thing I read.
Yeah, you probably, I loaned that to Fix It, so he thought probably loaned it to you, so that's probably why that happened. Yeah. Because if I remember correctly, that was the last story that John Ostrander did, and it was another attempt at a revival of his version of the Suicide Squad. The one that really took hold, though, was the New 52. Whether it was a buildup of goodwill over decades of people enjoying the groundbreaking work that Ostrander and company had done in the 80s, or if it just was that it was the right book at the right time, but with the New 52 relaunch and with them putting Harley Quinn on the team and really highlighting that character, DC had tried to make Harley Quinn happen in the comics several times over, and it hadn't really took, but something about the New 52 made it happen, and the current run of Suicide Squad is the most successful of the book's existence. While they change volumes over and over again, as is the nature of comic books these days, Suicide Squad's been continuously published since the New 52 in 2011. It went from a very marginal book, a cult favorite that never sold that great, to being a book that is consistently among DC's, at least a consistent seller. I don't know if it's a top seller, but it's definitely, the fact that it's been able to stay in publication for a decade now speaks to it's obviously having a success and having a devoted following that might keep up with it from volume to volume. And it just seems like they picked you up along the way as well.
Yeah, and I had read the New 52 up to, I think, volume 5. There was another book that wasn't Suicide Squad, but it had Bane in it.
Probably Gail Simone's Secret Six.
Yes. Okay, so I went from reading Suicide Squad to Secret Six, or they overlapped at the same time. I can't remember when they came out, but the premise was very similar.
Of the original 80s Suicide Squad, did you read the lion's share of that run, or just what was collected into trades, or what?
No, it was just that trade that Fix gave me.
Okay, so you haven't read any of the actual 80s stuff then?
No.
Okay.
No.
Now, and you do have experience with the team in animation as well.
Yeah, I watched the Batman Assault on Arkham, and then the second, it was just called The Suicide Squad, I think.
Yeah, it was subtitled Hell to Pay. It came out 4 years later in 2018.
Yeah, like them both. I like animation, so I could pick holes in both of them, but I enjoyed them both. I'd be lying if I said I didn't. So.
Yeah, I can't say that I'm too into the cartoons. Fix-It and I did part of an episode we talked about Assault on Arkham, where I was kind of nitpicking as somebody who was an 80s fan, but I don't know how much legitimacy that gives me, because as noted, the 80s series wasn't the one that blew up. It was the modern incarnation with Harley Quinn, I think that that perhaps scratches a different itch. You know, I like the political stuff. I like the character stuff. The modern incarnation is much more action-oriented. It leans more into the nihilism and such. And I for me, when I'm watching the cartoons, I just can't help but be irritated that they feel like they're getting a lot of the characters that I care about wrong, just leading too much into the violence. But I think the premise itself is so strong that no matter who's doing it, it's one of the things you're always looking for with any property, with any kind of franchise, is you want it to be self-sustaining. You want it to be able to have an audience regardless of the quality. You know, if something's a great work, you've got no guarantee that you're going to have a big audience and it's going to be a commercial success. But if something has that commercial appeal, that inherent appeal, then you can do good versions, you can do bad versions, and still have it be consistent and still have it in the public sphere. Whatever they've been doing since 2011 is working. The action, the violence, exceptionally lethal quality of Lethal Suicide Squad stories is pretty exceptional. So obviously there's an audience there, but me personally, I really don't like the cartoons. I hadn't watched Hell to Pay until recording. Yeah, that my life does not benefit from that viewing, unfortunately.
I gotcha.
Quick flashback, because I listened to another past episode of the DC special where unfortunately your audio was lost and it was just like me talking. It was like Garfield without Garfield, and it's like me as John just talking into the void. We were discussing the Batman Assault on Arkham. I wanted you to talk a little bit about that movie and also the Suicide Squad Hell to Pay that came out 4 years later in 2018. What did you think about the original Suicide Squad cartoons?
Oh, no, I think that's kind of what I thought it was kind of going that direction. I really, they're good. They're, to me, probably the far more superior DC movies, in my opinion. I enjoy them quite a bit. I own them. I do watch them on occasion. That Suicide Squad, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, so, because again, I've never read the book. And I know you keep telling me that, like, I think they have like the Ultimate Collection or some shit. And I do one day want to sit there and read it. Because I remember you were kind of trying to push it on me a long time ago when we first met. And it was one of those, like, I kind of wish I got into maybe earlier. But I mean, I'm all over the place, dude. I'm just rambling. The movies are great. I enjoy them. I love that they have a connecting arc. Like, there's connecting tissue between that and Flashpoint and stuff. So, you know, I highly recommend them. Have you seen them?
You and I watched Assault on Arkham and I didn't like it. And I watched Hell to Pay and I didn't like it either. And I just,
is there anything you like?
I know, right? Ever since the DC movies left the Timverse, the continuity that started with Batman the Animated Series and started doing more of that New 52 style cartoons, for the most part, I've hated all that shit. It was weird to me because you've got the Black Spider and Assault on Arkham, and then essentially the same character arc for Bronze Tiger in Hell to Pay, and where he's like this religious person and everything, and he's all about trying to get to heaven to be with his girl and shit. It's like, that's not Bronze Tiger, and I don't know what's even happening with this shit. And when we're talking about like James Gunn's edgelord tendencies, you get really hardcore edgelordiness in those fucking cartoons. About the only thing I liked was when they had the one Dr. Fate that was Channing Tatum, and he had like the tramp stamp onk and stuff. That was funny. That was cute, because it's like, there have been a hell of a lot of doctor, like Dr. the Helm of Fate is a whore. Like, so many fucking people have put themselves into that hole, into that sheath, that yeah, it would make sense that at some point Channing Tatum would be one of them.
I take it, not a Tate fan.
No, I like Channing Tatum, but it was just so clear that that's what they were doing, that, you know, it was the male dancer from Magic Mike and shit, who's suddenly a Dr. Fate. It's like, he even had brown hair and shit. The dude was Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
And I also talked about how, especially given that I didn't like Bronze Tiger, I mean, he wasn't terrible or anything, I just didn't care for how they handled Bronze Tiger and Hell to Pay, how much I preferred Batman Soul of the Dragon.
Nice pad.
Richard.
You haven't changed at all, Bruce.
You might be surprised.
What was that back there? A mask?
It's a way to keep my lives separate. I can't think of the last time we saw each other.
I bet you can remember the last time. The first time, too.
I'm eager to learn.
They all say that. Ben Turner. Richard Dragon. Shiva. Disciplined. Honorable. She's very dedicated.
Ben.
Shiva.
I assume you're in some kind of trouble.
The Cobra Cult, a worldwide organization of murderous zealots.
Kill them.
We have to stop it, no matter what.
I ain't ever gonna turn down whooping somebody's ass.
No matter how much you train, evil remains.
We're not done yet.
Begin.
Our quarry is a bit more formidable than we thought.
That's handy.
This isn't going to be easy.
Remember, you are stronger together than apart.
Really?
You like Batman Soul of the Dragon? You didn't like Suicide Squad?
Yeah, because the Suicide Squad stuff, it leans so much into the language and the violence, and I think at the expense of the characters and the premise, where with Soul of the Dragon, while they take liberties from the comics are taking liberties from, by and large, weren't that good to begin with, and you're mostly getting off on the kung fu action anyway. They're essentially doing...
You don't like kung fu movies. You told me that...
Right, but the comic books that Bronze Tiger comes from were kung fu comics, and so when you get that vibe correct, as I think they did with Soul of the Dragon, it feels like a Bruce Lee type of movie, then I figure you're doing a good job with it, and I'm happy with how, you know, Lady Shiva's portrayed. I didn't have a problem with them race swapping Richard Dragon, because he was always the worst character in his own stories anyway, and most importantly for me, Bronze Tiger. I mean, the whole reason why I got it was because they had a deal at one of the big box stores where if you got it in 4K, it came with a figurine of Bronze Tiger in period attire. I bought it for that alone, but I was glad that I liked the cartoon too. So I bought the whole package. I think it was even a 4K, you know, frou-frou one. I only just recently bought a 4K for the British edition of Dawn of the Dead.
I bought it. I buy all the DC animated movies for my daughter. And I like kung fu movies, but I was just kind of like, this is just all right.
Where do you think it came up short?
Probably the whole 70s vibe. I just felt like I was watching something that had been done before. It reminded me so much of Enter the Dragon that I was like, it kind of took me out of it.
Yeah, it very much was a pastiche. So I can see that. The whole point was them paying homage to the 70s kung fu movies, but in paying homage, you can also just feel like a retread. And yeah. So it was Batman in a retread of a 70s kung fu flick.
I do agree with you that I like how they handled Shiva, because most of the times in recent times, if she shows up in a cartoon, like she showed up in Superman Batman, and I believe the same thing happened in the comics, where like there's a showdown between her and Batman just one punches her, and it's like, dude, this chick's supposed to be like the pinnacle of fighting.
Yeah, one of our podcasting friends is Dr. Ange, and he talks about yardstick characters. I think usually he dislikes it, but basically you have these characters that are like the avatars of the thing they do well. And in DC in the martial arts, since the 80s at least, when Denny O'Neil brought her back in The Question and in some of the annuals from I think 88, they've established that Shiva is pretty much the top of the food chain when it comes to martial artists. She's the one to beat. And Batman, while a very good martial artist, there are plenty of guys in the DC universe that are much better at that particular skill set. Usually when he beats one of those guys, it's because he's pulling some shit out of his utility belt or something. It's not because he can actually outfight them. So if they ever show him beating Shiva, it pisses me off, because that's not the way that's supposed to go down. That's, you know.
Well, and didn't he go to her when, was it after Bane or before Bane?
If you're talking about after he had his back injury and he's trying to recover from it, then yeah, he went back to Lady Shiva and trained underneath her to regain his skills.
Okay, yeah, I thought that was right.
It's an acknowledgement of her ability, but also it turns her into a glorified physical trainer.
Yeah.
She was his therapist. You know, it's like, okay, but she, I'll buy it, but I really feel like she's got better things to do than help train Batman up again.
Well, she respects him, so I don't know. I guess I could see it. I could actually see that, even if it's her enemy or whatever. But I see your point, too.
I tried to watch it, and I didn't enjoy them.
And see, Fryhole said the same thing. I'll admit it wasn't anything exceptional. Like, it wasn't anything, like, super special, but it also didn't piss me off. And I have an affection for all those characters. I love Bronze Tiger and Lady Shiva. So yeah. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with that one.
I just couldn't get into it. I tried to watch and I was like, I got about halfway through and I was just like, I got other things to do. So, I mean, it wasn't horrible. I don't like when they do weird shit like that with Batman. Like when they're trying to like, this is before he became, you know, the great detective, and he was this crazy punk that was going out beating up people. And I don't know. That's just me.
I hear the train coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
Movie opened up with Folsom Prison Blues by Johnny Cash. What did you think about its usage in the movie?
A little too on the nose, maybe.
Yeah, pretty on the nose. That's true.
Yeah.
What about People Who Died by the Jim Carroll Band?
I mean, let's be honest. A lot of these songs have a running theme in them. So just like Not Your Fool, not Steve Miller Band.
Are you talking about a song from this movie, or you're talking about like some for Guardians or something?
Well, no. The song that he used for the trailer.
Okay.
Steely Dan.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh yeah, my dirty work. Oh yeah.
Yeah, you missed distinct lack of Steely Dan in the actual movie.
Yeah.
And I know you really got into that in the trailer.
Well, because it kind of threw me back to a time period in my life. But still, it was one of those things where let's be honest, this is the most Marvel DC movie that's ever come out. This is like Marvel Light.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. The soundtrack was great for the songs that I caught. Now, granted, it's very rare. I've already seen the movie twice.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you see it theatrically?
No. You did HBO Max, man. Yeah, okay. I'm paying for it. Might as well. I've already paid my ticket, so I'm going to use it. But, you know, watch it with my mother. She really liked it. Then I rewatched the next day because I was kind of like, the first initial watching was just taking it in.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
What did you think of the usage of people who died?
How does that one go? Never heard the song till that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
It dates back to 1982. I don't remember if I heard it on the college station in the early 90s or if it made a big comeback when they made the Leonardo DiCaprio movie, The Basketball Diaries in 1995 about Jim Carroll. But I remember that getting a fair amount of radio play at least on the station I was listening to. And so it was really familiar to me. And at first I was thinking, well, haven't they used that in other movies? But A, you know, aside from The Basketball Diaries, not so much. But B, it's such a great usage that I really can't fault it.
I couldn't place it.
Twice, so you don't remember the song that plays when they're panning over the island after the massacre?
Oh, no, I know that song. I just never heard it until this year.
This movie,
yeah.
Wow, okay.
You know, I hear quite a bit of music, but there's some stuff I've never heard. This was one of them. I never heard that song.
We'll do a little bit of a speed round with the characters, too. You like Michael Rooker, don't you? You liked him as Savant?
Yeah. Was he an asshole when we went to Comic Palooza, though?
Did you go to that panel that
with you when he was picking on the little Asian guy.
Yeah, Ming Chen from Comic Book Guys. Yeah, he felt like a bully, you know, the way he was manhandling the guy. And because he was so big and obnoxious, Paquita couldn't stand him on sight, basically. But it's not like she was a huge fan of Merle from Walking Dead to begin with, but she really hated him after that panel.
I just remember you telling me that, and I was like, really? Because I think we went up to his signing booth, and he was being kind of loud and just obnoxious. Now, that's just a personal thing. I'm sure he's a lovely man, private, but I just remember that happening, and that kind of stuck in my head. So when I saw him, I was kind of like, I don't know. It was weird. But
I think he's a what you see is what you get kind of dude. I kind of feel like there's a lot of shades of Merle to him, and that a lot of his own personality bled into that role specifically. I just think that that's just who he is, and you either like that or you don't.
Yeah.
So when he's getting the injection in the back of his neck, did you happen to catch the cameo who was playing Dr. Fitzgibbon?
Ostrander, the writer, right?
Yep. Did you see him when he was at Colin Palooza that one year?
Nope. And just so Mac will know, yes, I saw that on the top 10 Easter eggs you fucking missed in the movie on YouTube.
Oh, okay. So you didn't catch it on your own, though.
No, I didn't catch it the first time. I didn't. But it was kind of cool because the top 10 did discuss a little bit that he was an actor previously.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they gave him the scene even quicker. He's like, oh, you're already an actor.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, he was an actor before he was ever a writer.
Great. I mean, you get those cameos where the guy stands out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell like he doesn't fit in the movie because he's not an actor. I'm trying to think of a movie that I saw where like they had this cameo and the cameo was very stiff. He kind of didn't blend in too well with the other characters. Like all the other, even the extras already know how to react to like the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And this one guy stood out, and so when it happened I was like, dude, it was cool. Like, you know, I honestly thought they were gonna say like, isn't there like some fucking egghead or some character like that in the DC universe, some weird shit like that?
Potentially, yeah, Marvel. I'm sure, yeah. Egghead is specifically Marvel, but both universes have those, you know, random science guys and stuff.
Okay.
I wanted to apologize because when we were talking about Captain America the last time, and I made the crack about YouTube foo, but I want to make sure it's clear, you're actually really good at spotting actors, and you know your actors pretty well. So I felt like I was diminishing your abilities by, you know, going into the YouTube thing. So I just want to make sure you get proper credit.
I just pick on Mac about that because I do like watching those because they put so much shit in these movies sometimes. It's really hard to catch everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so
the one that got me is I was looking at the credits and they said that Adrian Chase is in Suicide Squad somewhere. I have a weird fixation on the vigilante character because he was in one of the Titans annuals I read as a kid that I fucking loved, one of my favorite comic books as a kid. did had that Adrian Chase character. And I could not find the dude in the movie anywhere. Did you ever see that guy? Did they, in any of those videos, they show you where the hell Adrian Chase is?
No.
Okay. Well, he's supposed to be in the Peacemaker show. So I was just curious where he was at, essentially.
No, I did not catch him.
So Sean Gunn as both the Weasel and Calendar Man.
Which was great. I love that they did do, and again, fucking top 10 list, but apparently behind Calendar Man is Double Decker.
Too deep for me, man. I don't even know how that is.
I tell you, y'all can make fun all you want about those fucking top 10 lists, but they definitely do the research. But apparently the character behind Calendar Man is some guy called Double Decker or Double Deck or some bullshit like that. I was like, I never heard of him. I thought it was kind of neat they put Calendar Man in there.
I thought it was smart that they did the version from The Long Halloween where he's got the tattoos encircling his head with the months.
The Hannibal Lecter version.
I wouldn't go that far, but somewhat similar, yeah.
Dude, he was like in a glass cage. And
yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Dude, it's been so long since I read that series.
I never liked The Long Halloween. I always thought it was an overrated piece of shit, but especially that fucking ending. God, I hate that fucking ending. The twist!
Well, you gotta love the twist.
But it was not... I love... That's part of the reason why we watch these movies is because we all knew a bunch of who these characters were going to appear in this movie, and then out of left field, here's the Calendar Man, and you either get it or you don't. So that's definitely the nerd Scooby snack, basically. That was our little treat there.
It was... I mean, I thought that was kind of cool.
So Pete Davidson is Blackguard.
Which I didn't know who that was, but I thought that was kind of cool.
Either way?
Yeah, I never heard of Blackguard.
I wasn't sure if you'd ever heard of Pete Davidson.
Oh, no. I've seen Davidson. I've seen Saturday Night Live, The King's Staten Island, which I thought was a pretty cool movie. But like Pete Davidson as an actor, I mean, I think I've even caught his comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was pretty funny. I mean, I thought he was.
I liked him. I thought he was, you know, he wasn't in the movie that much. And apparently, I think because of the whole Ariana Grande thing, there's a bunch of people who are literally gunning for him, you know?
Yeah.
I think he's maybe, I mean, he gets more attention than he deserves, but I also think he's overhated because I like the guy okay. He seems like an all right dude. Who isn't a douchey bag at like 26, 27 years old, especially with his level of fame? So I liked his moments in the movie and I had fun with him. And plus Blackguard, I got suckered into buying Booster Gold number one because I was looking at the book Inside a Circle K and there was an advertisement for Booster Gold in one of the comics I was flipping through that said you'd get a button if you bought the comic. So I took it up to the register thinking I was going to get a button and I got no fucking button because Circle K doesn't give you fucking buttons and shit. So that's how I got suckered into buying Booster Gold number one. I got robbed out of my fucking button and that comic book had the first appearance of Blackguard, who was a lame-o. So, you know, he deserves to have his face.
But he's like a mobster, right? Something like that?
I think he was like an enforcer or something, and he had a long purple ponytail and armor and shit. He was a fucking Booster Gold villain. Nobody's gonna remember this motherfucker.
But was he like, okay. I mean, I know they were supposed to be getting characters like, you know, unknown characters.
Mm-hmm.
So was that like a deep cut or no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Blackguard got a Who's Who entry, so you're never completely obscure if you at least got into one of the encyclopedia books. But the only reason why he got a Who's Who entry is because he happened to come out during the Update 87, Update 88 years. Nobody gave a shit about Blackguard ever.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. He's like the first Booster Gold villain, and they don't even use him in Booster Gold comics. That's how fucking low down this dude is. So, Flula Borg as Javelin.
Well, he's a YouTuber star, right? Or some shit like that?
Is he? Apparently, he was in one of the Pitch Perfect movies, but I didn't know. The name is vaguely familiar, but I didn't know who the fuck this dude was.
Yeah, I don't particularly know him very well either.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding, he's like supposed to be a YouTube star. That's all I knew about him.
I just like that they got an actual German guy to play the German supervillain. And again, that's one of those personal tweaks is one of the only Green Lantern comic books I bought when I was a kid had one of the early, if not the first appearance of Javelin in it. So that character has this weird little nostalgic meaning to me that wouldn't normally be present.
So another deep cut?
No, definitely. Yeah, nobody knows who the fuck Javelin is. He got a Who's Who entry too, though.
At one point, I was going to call you and ask you, did James Gunn just make up some characters? Like, I knew Polka Dot Man. I knew some of them. But at one point, I was like, did James Gunn just make up some of these fucking characters? Like, did they just tell him, hey, James, you can make these up if you want. Like,
the only one I think he actually made up was Nathan Fillion as TDK, the detachable kid. Because there's actually... What's that?
That's not a real character?
Well, here's the thing. They're infamously one of the people who once auditioned for the Legion of Superheroes was Arms Fall Off Boy. And so my assumption is he's doing a variation on Arms Fall Off Boy, who isn't as powerful actually as TDK, because what he could do is he was kind of a big guy, like a muscular guy, and his ability was to take one of his arms and use it to detach the other arm and could beat you with the arm.
Okay.
And so that was his whole power.
That was his whole shtick.
Yeah, that was his whole shtick. So of course he didn't amount to anything and he's been a punchline ever since. He was designed to be a punchline, clearly. And so my assumption is TDK is just a variation on Arms Fall Off Boy.
Okay.
I know he's a little bit older and a little bit pudgier now, but it'd be nice if at least once Nathan Fillion would get a role in one of these superhero movies that isn't like completely super minor and he's gone in like 5 minutes, you know? Like I really do hope that at some point somebody will actually make use of him being cast as Simon Williams in the Guardians Guardians of the Globe, sorry, the Volume 2 of Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, he was only ever appeared in like movie posters and stuff, I think, in the actual movie. But I would like him to actually be Simon Williams somewhere, sometime, even if it's an episode of What If or something.
Oh, yes. We'll talk about that in a minute. Okay. Go ahead. Next song. So I got down on my knees.
Made a sucker's prayer. Sucker's Prayer by the Decemberists, which plays when Idris Elba is cleaning the prison.
I thought it was a cool song.
Yeah. No, so as far as like your Jangly like indie rock.
Does he get a lot of deep cut songs? Because, I mean, some songs I knew off the bat, but like some of these songs I never heard of.
Yeah. Yeah. And Decemberists are one of these bands that I'll read about when I'm reading a music magazine, but never had any exposure to them.
Gotcha.
And I think that I tend to think of this Mellow Gold from the 1970s as being James Gunn's lane. And he definitely goes for, even when he's still going for singles, you know, he's not like doing a lot of album cuts and stuff. Yeah. And it seems like maybe more of his taste got into this movie. And it does seem to lean toward the indie side, it seems like.
Yeah, because I mean, in Guardians of the Galaxy, there's a lot of top 40 hits and shit. Mm-hmm. Like he's doing a lot of mainstream music. Where this one, yeah, like I said, there's already some songs. I enjoyed them. I thought they went well with Dean, mm-hmm. but I had never heard the songs before. So if you're lonely, why'd you say you're not lonely? Oh, you're a silly girl. I know, I heard it's so. It's just like you to come and go.
So, Whistle for the Choir by the Fratellis. That's the song that plays during the courtship of Harley Quinn by El Presidente.
Thought it was a cute song.
Yeah, it was all right. I can't sleep. I hope I stay awake. Cause I've been running, running, running all day. Long nights. No peace. I've been running, running, running. Can't Sleep by Kayflay. That's the song that plays during the bar sequence.
I mean, I thought it was just a club song.
Yeah. See, this is the funny thing. When I was watching the movie, I was critiquing the music and thinking about how, you know, he has a harder time hitting the mark because he's not going for the hits of the 70s.
Yeah. But
then what happened is I watched the movie theatrically, and then I watched bits and pieces of it at home. I've only seen it one time all the way through, and the rest of the time it's just been bits.
Really?
Yeah. But in preparing for the podcast, since I had some time to do that, I listened to the soundtrack several times over. The songs really grew on me. So where at first I was like, eh, okay, nice try, Gun. As I listened to the music more, I really got into it. And like in this Kayflay, for instance, during the sequence in the bar, the first time it's playing, I'm like you said, just like, okay, great. Some, you know, semi hip hoppy club type music. But the lyrics are pretty cool. And then if you go and you watch the video, somebody went to like Thailand or something, and they basically got some dude doing parkour, you know, all over the town and kind of showing the sights and going through their red light district and showing like children asleep in their markets and shit. And I guess they had a decent quality camera, but it was too crisp. So it looks like something you'd film for a YouTube video as opposed to like a music video. It doesn't have any kind of like style to it. It's more like documenting. And so that lo-fi quality where it's like, you know, they obviously didn't have any money and this isn't really a known person. And for all I know, it's a buddy of Guns or something. So I gave it more credit because it was definitely more of a deep dive. But also, I started really liking the song as I listened to it more and more, and it grew on me. It's not my kind of music, but the lyrics started to speak to me, and I just started to groove with it. So, whereas at first I was going to be kind of dismissive, now I'm actually pretty fond of the soundtrack.
Okay, cool.
So, Mei Ling Nung, I guess that's how you pronounce it, as Mon Gal. And you know, there's another one that's going
to... I did not exist. I did not know she existed.
You didn't know, or you didn't think?
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Mongo.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was Mon Gal.
What happened was Jeff Loeb was using Mongol in the early 2000s, and he introduced, I think they'd already introduced they'd introduced the son of Mongol because that was the character that Pete Tomasi did back in the early 90s on Showcase, and I remember introducing you to that two-parter, and you really took to it.
Yeah.
And then in the early 2000s, Jeff Loeb started using those characters and also introduced the sibling Mon Gal, and then Tomasi went around and killed her off a few years later, and it's
okay,
a dumb name.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a dumb name, and I know that Mongol's a problematic character, character because he's a big yellow peril riff, essentially. But it still bugs me because you got Mongal, and there's no way she would die in a fire like that.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird. I remember thinking, Mongal took on fucking Superman. Like, how does she die in a fire? So I was going to ask you if that was even another character. Because I thought, you know, fuck, Mongal took on Superman. Like, how the fuck is she going to die in a fire from a helicopter?
And somebody like Mongal is one instance where I kind of wish they didn't cast a minority character, actor, particularly an Asian actor, to play Mongal. But, yeah. You know, it is what it is. And then finally, the returning Jai Courtney as Captain Boomerang. And I re-listened to the Suicide Squad podcast we did for the 2016 Ayer version. And not a lot of love for Jai Courtney's Boomerang in that. And I thought I remembered liking him more. So am I misremembering, or was he, like, because you've seen Suicide Squad a few times in the years since, right?
Yes.
So
Not intentionally.
He had some good moments in that movie, didn't he? I just remember kind of liking him.
I remember thinking he should have been douchier. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember thinking, again, we now know that they went back and they kind of cleaned up the movie a little bit, but I remember thinking he should have been douchier. You know, he's not, I mean, does he really have a superpower, or is it just throws fucking boomerangs?
Just throws boomerangs. I mean, the whole thing with Captain Boomerang is he was a guy who's completely past his prime. He was somebody who even people who are Flash fans mocked Boomerang because he was just so far beneath the hero. And so Ostrander takes him and brings him into the Suicide Squad. And of course, you're thinking, okay, this is a Flash villain when Flash doesn't even have a book anymore, or isn't even bothering to use his rogues anymore because he'd been succeeded by Wally West. And so you're thinking nothing's going to come to this dude except for maybe death. And instead, Captain Boomerang becomes one of the best characters in the series and a fan favorite based on how Ostrander treated him, mostly because his superpower was being a fucking scumbag. His whole thing was that he was not a hero. He was always looking out for himself. And so he knew where the boundaries were. So even though he would push the boundaries, he would never get his head blown off. He would never sacrifice himself heroically. He would always find a way to get out of the worst situation so that he wouldn't perish or anything. And so he was just capable of surviving by being a self-interested scumbag. That was his whole thing. So the best thing about the character is he's a shit.
Which I thought, you know, I really thought that's how he should have been.
Mm-hmm. Well, he kind of was. We just didn't get to spend a lot of time with him in either one of the movies, unfortunately. And it's funny because Jai Courtney doesn't do, like, career-wise, I've never seen him in anything where he's worth a shit. This is like the only role he ever did that I actually like, and I think he does a good job with it. I think it might even be his natural accent, and I like it. I kind of wish we'd gotten more of him in this one. Like, I loved when he was fucking with Pete Davidson on the helicopter and shit.
No, yeah. Well, I kind of liked whenever Harley got on the plane, which is very rare for me to say, but I liked it when she's like, hey, Boomer, and they're just like old friends, and they're kind of picking on everybody. Like, this is fresh meat for the grinder type, you know, almost like they're the seniors, and they're, you know, we're being introduced to the freshmen.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of a cool scene.
Yeah, I dug it. I did wonder, though, when Boomerang was scraping the shit off his shoe, and then 5 minutes later, he's fucking torn to pieces. I did feel like maybe there was some sort of weird subtext there, like, you know, Gunn was shitting on Ayers' characters or something.
You think so?
I don't know. I was wondering about that. He literally scraped shit off his shoe with the boomerang, you know?
Well, I thought it was going to be the shit came from Weasel. Like, he walked behind Weasel. That's what I thought it was going to be. The running gag was like Weasel took his shit and he stepped in it.
That makes the most sense. I assume that.
And it didn't go in that direction.
Let's see. We kind of already touched on those other actors.
No, real quick.
Any thoughts on... Oh, go ahead.
I got a question. So was Weasel like that in the comic too?
No. So Firestorm, I don't know if you've ever read...
Like, dude, that's fucking amazing if that's real.
Yeah. If you've ever read Firestorm comics, I don't know how much familiarity you even have with the character. You've probably seen him in cartoons and stuff, right?
Of like, you know, isn't he like the Alchemist or some bullshit like that? I have very little knowledge of him.
Yeah, he can transmute matter. And so the selling point with the Flash, I mean, sorry, with Firestorm going back to the 70s was that it was what if Flash Thompson had been bitten by the radioactive spider instead of Peter Parker? So it's sort of like a jockey guy who gets the powers, and so he's not really smart enough to use the incredible powers he's got, which is why he merges with the professor, and the professor is the one who's kind of helping to direct the dumb jock guy. And so what was weird is he's such an extraordinarily powerful character, and then he's constantly got these like kind of lame-oid, like 70s Bronze Age minor league Spider-Man villains. And one of his big ones was the Hyena, who was basically like a werewolf type character. And there was several Hyenas, in fact. There was like almost like a legacy within the span of time that Firestorm had a successful career in comic books. And like toward the end of that, after they'd already kind of burned through the Hyena, they sort of self-ripped off and came up with this person called the Weasel. And if I remember correctly, it wasn't even a were person. I think it was a suit. The person put on like a furry suit. And so extremely minor character. So what you saw on the screen was essentially just James Gunn appropriating the concept of a humanoid weasel and just kind of doing his own thing with it.
Because I was going to say, didn't you have like a piece of artwork done? But then I realized, oh no, that was a squirrel.
That was the human squirrel from the Martian Manhunter. Yeah,
I was thinking, didn't Frank get like fucking personal art of this fucked up character? I'm like, I gotta find out. Like, I remember never seen that. And then when I, you know, of course, when we saw it, I'm like, oh no, the fucking weasel.
Right, right. I'm fairly confident they were never going to see them go deep enough to get into the Martian Manhunter Rogues Gallery, because none of those fuckers ever showed up in the encyclopedias, the who's who, nothing. So you'd have to be like, you'd have to be at my level of fandom to even know who those fuck characters are. So nah, really? It ain't gonna happen. The best I can hope for is Despero and Mongol having shit to do, you know? And Mongol is so tangential to Martian Manhunter, especially at this point, that even calling him a Martian Manhunter villain is me overreaching. It's okay, I'm not okay. I get the disarray of yesterday. Oh my, I need to feel the raindrops on my head, on my head. I know nothing, so I embrace what I could not control. So Rain by Grandson and Jesse Reyes. This was a song that played in one of the main trailers, not the Steely Dan song, but one of the later ones, more of a slow jam kind of thing. And it plays when they're actually like in the rain, in the sequence where it's raining.
Oh, okay. I remember that song. I don't remember it.
Okay. I like it. Again, it grew on me. Not as much as the other ones, but I do like it. I Ain't Got Nobody by Louis Prima.
That one was what?
That's the old timey song that First Party Queen is singing to herself.
I'm just a gigolo, gigolo, and everywhere I go, gigolo, people gigolo, know the part I'm playing.
I thought David Lee did it better, but
yeah, that was my exposure to the song, and that song is really meaningful to me to the point where I probably ought to do a one song each about it. So I don't want to go too much into it, but I wasn't as into any version besides Diamond Dave's, because that's the one that was my first exposure.
Yeah, that's my exposure to that song too.
Hey. Been trying to meet you.
Hey by the Pixies. That's the song that plays when they get to Jotunheim. When they're like driving in.
Yeah, I know that song. Yeah, the Pixies. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it worked with the scene. That's when they're walking up and it's raining real hard.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know it's during the rain sequence. I think it's just when they're driving in.
Okay. When they're driving with, what's his name? Milton?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Milton's my hero. Yeah. it was pretty good. I mean,
my thing with that one is I don't even know if I'd ever heard the song before Zach and Miri Make a Porno. And that was the first movie I ever took Paquita to. It was a double date with Mac and Mrs. Mac, and that song was used so effectively in this movie that I think it's pretty minor in Kevin Smith's filmography, and I don't think it did. It's probably one of the worst performances of his career in terms of at the box office, but I thought that song was used so well in that movie, and because it was my first exposure to a Pixie song and one that I grew to really, really like, for me, that song will always be owned by that movie. And given that it was a somewhat throwaway usage in this movie, that was the only one that kind of was a false note for me, because I didn't feel like that was his song to take.
Oh, wow. Okay. Not his song to take. Okay.
Well, I'm a big believer. Especially when a song is used really effectively in a movie. I like there's enough music out there that deserves exposure that, you know, don't do Layla again. You know, that's a song that can be retired. Go find another song so that you can own that song.
I won't lie. There's certain songs from Martin Scorsese films that I never want to see in another film again.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's certain people, once they've used it in their film, that film is so associated with that song, like Little Green Bag, Reservoir Dogs. Mm-hmm. I can never hear that song in any other movie.
A lot of Tarantino movies have songs that just are owned by that movie.
Yeah. So, yeah, I fully understand what you're talking about there.
Life is so busted. Life is so busted. My car is so busted. Life, I'm so busted. And I just wanted to be loved by you.
Okay, so the song So Busted by Culture Abuse, which plays at the beginning of the closing credits.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, that's sort of like a kind of a pop-punky kind of thing. And again, it's one of those where it wouldn't necessarily be my taste, although I felt like it suited the material, it suited Suicide Squad. But again, yeah. I watched the video for it, and it's like a couple of dads with their kids. It's like no budget whatsoever. And it just looks like something like they're almost like a hobbyist doing this music video. And I didn't go deeper into it, but based on not knowing who the fuck these guys are and seeing the music video, figuring these guys are probably nobodies, being elevated to a platform they never would have had before, I definitely enjoy the song more now than I would have without that context.
I feel like such an asshole now because I didn't really put that much, I didn't critique the music as deeply as you're doing right now. I feel kind of like an asshole now because I was just kind of like, oh, it's a song. Yeah, song.
No, don't feel bad. And then the last song is Oh No by Grandson.
You know the deal. Successfully complete the mission, you get 10 years off your sentence. You're my dream, you're my nightmare.
Life is a dream, you don't fight fair. Welcome, Task Force X. These are your brothers and sisters for the next few days. Run away from the pain, I don't care.
This is the second song by Grandson on the soundtrack. And this is the one that played over that teaser that they had at the very beginning of promoting the movie, where it's nothing but audio clips and images from the comics and then images of the movie translating to the comics. You remember that one, right?
Kind of vaguely.
Yeah. And it also plays at the latter part of the closing credits. No, not enough recollection to comment on it?
No.
That's another one where it feels like kind of a bro-y, you know, rock rap number.
Okay.
Wouldn't normally be to my taste, but in its usage and the fact that they got somebody who's really not that well known, it suits the material. I like its use in the teaser, and so I don't have any problem with it being in the movie. I like it fine. The soundtrack this movie isn't something that I probably would play over and over again, but I do enjoy the songs without it having to be in context, but within the context makes it even better.
Okay. I hate the fact that this is like James Gunn is just coming over to make one more Marvel movie and leave, because I was sitting there, I was trying to think, what does Marvel have that is comparable to Suicide Squad? And I was thinking about it because when we're, you know, I missed that time when you're on podcast. I was thinking about it that day even. And I'm like, you know what? X-Force. Static X. I want to see a James Gunn movie do Static X where you have celebrities that are fucking just scumbags. Like,
so when you say X-Force, you're talking about the Peter Milligan, Michael Ridley.
Or was it Static X?
I think you dyslexed it a little bit. I think you're talking about the X-Statics.
Yeah, but they were X-Force.
Static X was the group who did the song for the Batman movie, the rock song that appeared in like Return of the Joker from Batman Beyond.
So what is it, X-Static or Static?
Yeah, the X-Static.
Okay, but they were X-Force first, right?
Yeah. They started
I remember
the numbering for X-Force and played out the end of that series, and it relaunched as the X-Static.
Yeah, I remember reading that, you know, they had the Layfield character in there, and they were really scummy. And I was like, holy shit, this is like their version of Suicide Squad. I never realized it, because I've actually gone back and started rereading those. They're fantastic.
I remember when they first were starting to come out, I was like, oh, this is for Fix-It for sure. And yeah, I was not incorrect about assuming that, yeah. Now, and of course, Suicide Squad couldn't go that intense because it came out 20 years earlier, you know, but it definitely reminded me of Suicide Squad as well, but obviously next level because you could go to those authority places by that point because that ground had been broken in the time since.
But I remember watching Suicide Squad, because I was thinking about that. I'm like, damn, I would have loved to see something like this, because to me that movie is definitely a one-off. I was kind of expecting that I was surprised that Drax would show up. I would have figured,
well, you know what happened with that, right?
No,
from what I understand,
something he was supposed to.
The part was written for Dave Bautista, and I think the safe assumption is that it was Peacemaker. And what happened is that ultimately Bautista turned it down because the filming of Suicide Squad conflicted with Army of the Dead, and he felt more passionate about that role, and he felt like it was a better showcase for him. And I 100% agree. I think that he made the right call, in part because Army of the Dead is seen as a fairly successful Netflix movie, where this movie seems to be struggling, unfortunately. And also, it just gave him a chance to show more sides of himself. He had more, you know, facets of that character, and just more screen time and more stuff to do. Did you see Army of the Dead?
Yeah, I thought it was okay.
I mean, I didn't love the movie, but I thought he was good in the movie. I thought, especially for a performer who doesn't often get to do the things that he was doing within that movie.
Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, I thought it was...
Like the way he's wrestling with his guilt over his wife and honestly, his relationship with his daughter
and
stuff.
I liked him better in the Blade Runner.
I haven't seen it yet, though.
I enjoyed him. But granted, he's a small role. It's not this huge role. But I just kind of... I guess I liked him in that one better. But, you know...
I liked him a lot as a Bond villain. I thought I really enjoyed seeing him in... I think it was the last one they came out with, Spectre. And it's not like he did anything in terms of, like, you know, acting that was all that great. But I just liked his physical presence and seeing him in the suits and everything. He looked like a cool Bond villain.
He looked like a new version of Oddjob.
Yeah, Bautista's one of these guys. I just like the guy. You know, I just root for him. And I think he seems like a good guy and a stand-up guy. And I just like him.
I agree. There's certain actors I follow their careers just because I like them. Keanu Reeves is one of them.
Yeah.
I watched some of the worst Keanu Reeves movies I've ever... endured some horrible Keanu Reeves movies. I just like Keanu.
Yeah, I was reading an article earlier today where they were talking about Brendan Fraser having a moment right now. And that's another guy. You know, I didn't see, like, George of the Jungle, and we've talked about how I've never seen Encino Man, so I know him from, like, Blast from the Past and Monkey Bone and, well, the simple fact I fucking saw Monkey Bone.
Still a great movie.
Yeah, Gods and Monsters. He's another one of these guys where once I started seeing him in movies, I just really love the guy, and I'm really happy for him to see him having success again. You know, it seems like Doom Patrol has helped to kind of bring his career back, and I just love seeing that guy whenever he shows up in anything. I want him to be my Superman back in the day.
Oh, wow, I didn't know. Oh, yeah, that's right. He was one of the runner-ups.
A lot of it comes down to je ne sais quoi. I think that all the elements are here for a good movie, and I enjoyed it. Again, I know I'm very critical of it, but for what it is, for a big, violent action movie, I enjoyed it. But it's almost like it was a little too safe in some ways. It's like it was an acceptable level. Like, there's some tits in there, but just a little bit of tits, and they're off in the distance, you know? Kind of a pussy version.
I know, my son was looking for him, and when he saw him, he goes, boobies!
Yeah. it was kind of a pussy version of a balls out show. Like, when Vanessa, I think is the name of the character, the copycat character, when she is pegging Deadpool in the first Deadpool movie, that's way more of a shock and way more transgressive than anything that's in this movie, because all the violence and the little bit of sexual elements, it just doesn't go very far. It's like dad trying to go back and be edgy again, but he's lost the edge. So it's sort of a safe version of edginess. But also, I think the main problem is the Tommy Wiseau factor, where it's really obvious that there's a limited amount of investment on the writer's part in the characters. I think that there's a lot of investment in the visuals and the action. I think there's some strong attempts at making jokes, even though it doesn't necessarily come across. But I think you can just tell that he doesn't give a shit about these characters. And when he tries to act like he gives a shit, it just makes it even more obvious that he doesn't give a shit. And that's why the movie, for me, works so much better at the beginning when they're on the beach and you're having the massacre, because none of those characters are supposed to be worth a shit anyway. That's when the movie works. It's when they suddenly act like they care whether or not Bloodsport lives or dies. That's when I'm like, yeah, sure, buddy, sure, whatever. You know, again, why are we getting a Peacemaker TV spinoff when we could be getting an Amanda Waller one, you know, shit like that? Or why not explain that the reason why she put Harley Quinn and Rick Flag into the Divergent team is because she wanted to get rid of Rick Flag because she knew that he was going to be a problem or is becoming a problem, or maybe she's just as annoyed with Harley Quinn as the rest of us. But because they never tell us that, we're never on her side, and she's just the bitch with the trigger.
Yeah. I don't know. So, that, you know, I look at, they could totally do a good Amanda Waller, and I don't know why they don't. You know, like you said, they're going to have a Peacemaker or a TV show or whatever, but what made Gotham so popular the first couple seasons was really fleshing out those back characters. I don't know. It was just disappointing.
Sorry. I thought it was just, like I said, it was just okay.
I think it's interesting that all three of us were kind of like, were a little put out by it, a little disappointed by it. And that's another reason why I'm going to be very curious to see. I mean, as you said, the stands apparently like it. I don't know how much of that is, you know, DCEU boosting and yay my team, boo your team kind of bullshit. But I know, as a person who keeps wanting these DC movies to be good, and so thoroughly enjoyed the opening of this movie. It is a disappointment that it's a disappointment in those respects.
Dude, people were raving about this movie on like every site I went to. It would come up. I should have known
that I never am on team popular opinion.
I enjoyed it enough to finish it, but I don't think I'll watch it again anytime soon, so it's forgettable.
Can we talk about one last quick thing, and then we should probably wrap this up. The box office was fucking horrible for this movie. Is this just the combination? I mean, it's gotta be because HBO, right? Because this shit is like free on HBO. It's not like Black Widow, you had to pay. If you have Disney Plus, you still had to pay extra for Black Widow. This thing was just free, right? That's what destroyed this movie. Also, it's rated R, and also COVID. But like, forget those two things.
I think the COVID thing is starting to play another with that Delta variant. I've heard a lot of talk that a lot of people are going right back into the kind of lockdown mode. I think that plays a bigger part than you would think. But yeah, having HBO and being able to watch it from home for free.
Well, I mean, but how much did Black Widow make its opening weekend? It made like 100-some million, right?
I have no idea. Let's see, Black Widow.
Opening weekend box office. It made over 100 million at domestic box. Wait, no, hold on. Black Widow crosses 100 million at domestic box office in record time during pandemic. That was on July 15th. Anyway, whatever. It made 100 something million. But
how much did this make?
It made $26 million.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Like for the whole fucking weekend, not even 30 million. I mean, that's like, I expected it to be low, but like 26 million that's like nothing.
Well, so
that's
what I'm saying. You made a really good point when you brought up Black Widow, because that was just generally, it was a better movie, but also a way funnier movie. But also, if you look at the numbers, I think Black Widow domestic weekend was about 10 million over a Suicide Squad. And again, the DCU has not so great reputation. They've had more misses than hits. This might have word of mouth. There's a pandemic. There's all this stuff that goes into debating about, you know, why this would have come in 10 million below. And of course, Black Widow's the fucking new Marvel movie, and everybody's team Marvel. And so that's going to get a bump, and maybe it enjoyed that bump. Maybe that's why it got that over Suicide Squad. But there is some question, even with the pandemic variables, what is a good weekend anymore? And is it a win or is it a loss that this came in 10 million below Black Widow? And when the numbers are as slight as these, does it even matter? And plus, you've got the whole thing where, you know, Disney's making $30 a pop off of streaming Black Widow off of their app, where, you know, HBO Max has just got the basic subscriptions. Everybody gets it free, essentially, as long as you have a base subscription, and how that affects the money. There's a lot of good, there's going to be some really interesting math going on this year with movies this.
I should have already had the numbers. Okay, so Black Widow made $80 million on its opening weekend, and then it made it domestically, and then it made another $80 million worldwide. So it made about $160 million for its opening weekend. Plus, I think Disney reported like $60 million from Disney Plus. So,
and they're still calling that a disappointment and underperforming, you know, what does that even mean in the current circumstance, but okay, whatever.
So did Suicide Squad not get like a global release, or is it only domestic?
Some problems because Suicide Squad 2016 did not get released in China. I don't know if they have a plan of releasing it in China, the new one in China, but because of the level of violence, probably not. They don't like this level of violence in their movies, so you're losing a huge market there. And yeah, I don't think they have as big of a global rollout as Marvel had. I mean, in part because they're not fucking Marvel. There's a lot of factors that go into whether or not this movie is financially successful or not, whether or not it's, you know, I don't know. I'm very curious. Like, I went to Box Office Mojo, and unfortunately they didn't have an analysis yet, and I need people who know what they're talking about to give me an analysis. I've read some people that were mocked on Twitter because they were calling it the heads were going to roll over the performance of this movie and shit like that, and other people were like, what a bunch of fucking bullshit, these guys are just trying to fucking hype shit up and trying to make themselves seem like they're scoopers or something. I don't fucking know.
You know what? I found it on Box Office Mojo. It says Suicide Squad 26.5 domestic, 45.7 international. Doesn't really say all. The only markets reported are United Kingdom and France, but that doesn't make up the 45 million. So I don't know what other countries got released in.
When we started this, that wasn't up. This is new. Yeah, okay. It just got posted.
Maybe they just put it up. Yeah. So 72 combined worldwide was less than just domestic for Black Widow. I mean, that's. I get it. It's rated R. I get it. It's rated R. I get it. It's coming down off some shitty DC movies. I just thought like there was way more buzz for this movie. The only thing I can think of, other than, like I said, COVID and it being rated R, it's got to be that it was free. Like, dude, when we were texting back and forth about how we were going to watch it, I thought we had to go to a theater. I didn't realize they were going to put this thing out for. I mean, I know that HBO Max is not quote unquote free, but with password sharing and shit, it's fucking free. Like, it's nearly free. There are enough people are sharing passwords. Black, what are you had to pay? Even if you had Disney Plus, you had to pay for the premium to watch it. I didn't realize this thing free. And that's when you were like, oh, I'll probably just HBO Max it. And I'm like, wait, what? And then I clicked. I'm like, oh, I can watch it right now on HBO Max. I'm like, dude, forget that. We're not going to movie theater to watch this dumb movie. Now I was like, if you guys wanted to still get together, I'd be like, cool, let's go watch it again or something. But I didn't realize it was out there. And I don't know what they were thinking doing that. This makes no sense. So I don't know. I feel like some of the bombing of this movie doesn't really have to do about the movie, but it has to do with Warner Brothers botched the shit out of this dude. Like, this is all on Warner Brothers, in my opinion. And obviously some COVID, right? But yeah, they can't keep doing it. They can't just let, you can't just be able to borrow somebody's password and watch the movie. Like,
and also, I think there's a big problem too. I do remember reading online that Jungle Cruise did a fair bit better. Maybe that was the one that was the $10 million difference, but I think Jungle Cruise did better as well in its first weekend versus Suicide Squad. And nobody was like all a tingle over Jungle Cruise, even with The Rock.
Yeah. Jungle Cruise about $10 million more. Yep, you were right. That's what it was.
Or actually, I was wrong, and I'm correcting for it. Is I thought the disparity was between the Suicide Squad and Black Widow, but it was apparently between it and Jungle Cruise, which is much more of a condemnation. Much more damning.
Yeah, Jungle Cruise should not have made more than Suicide Squad. I don't believe. No, it's got The Rock in it, I guess. I don't know. This is very peculiar. Anyway, I'm curious. I want to see the breakdown as to how we figure out why this movie. I'm sorry, 26 million, pandemic or not. Holy shit! For the advertising they did for this film.
I think it's interesting too because I'm the only one of the people that is talking right now that actually bothered to see this thing in the theater. I wonder how often that's the case. Like under normal times, we would all have gone to the theater together and possibly have all gone to the 4D. And I'll tell you, I'm glad I did the 4D because there was a lot of action in this movie. And I tend to tune out on action sequences. Like you guys were talking about, it's like maybe I'm just old man. But I think it was always the case where overlong action sequences where I don't really feel anything, I try to check out. And I like that I'm sitting in the seat and it's rumbling and it's wiggling me around and stuff. And that's kind of keeping me engaged through actual, physical interaction with, what's happening. But there in the old times, we might have all gone to see that thing in the 4D theater. We would have all been popping out, $20 or so a pop to see it. And we'd have seen it during prime time when you're paying full price. And so they would have made $100 some odd off of just us seeing the movie. And instead, they just made what they made off me and my girlfriend on an off hour, That has an impact too. And with a movie like this, I think the opening weekend is hugely important. And if you're getting it for free relatively for free streaming, why wouldn't you just stream it? That was always the backup plan. I specifically, because of the reviews, because of my interest in the property, because of my hopes that this was going to be a one out of the park, I made a point of seeing this thing theatrically, but the backup plan was always just stream it. And if it had been any other movie, I would have just streamed it. I streamed Black Widow because I did not have enough confidence in that movie to risk going it to a theater to see it. And because it was just, I'll charge me $30 and I'll just watch it home. I'm cool with that. I'm fine. I don't think you can release blockbusters in this scenario. And I think that it speaks to the foolishness of the film distributors to keep trying to do this. This is not a movie you can put out in these times. Maybe you can put it out somewhere else in the world, but not in the United States right now. We've demonstrated this over and over again. You're just going to keep, if Black Widow didn't do it, why did you think the Suicide Squad was going to do it?
Right.
If the Marvel monolith can't overcome the pandemic, I assure you the DCEU is going to pull it off. So fucking, and I guess the money was already committed.
It might have been too late.
I think it was just too late, but you guys got to quit doing this. Make a bunch of shows for television. Stream your shit on Disney Plus and HBO Max and Prime, wherever the fuck you want it. TV is the place where you want people to be right now. They do not need to be in the theaters, and you're not going to make the kind of money you can make under normal circumstances in these times. The Suicide Squad could have made a ton of fucking money front-loaded just because it's a big actor that everybody go to the theater to see the first weekend when they didn't have any other options. But they've got tons of other options now, and there's a huge incentive to not fucking roll the fucking dice. So learn the lesson, Hollywood. It's so weird that they're so bullish when they really need to be conservative right now.
Yeah, so I just wanted to briefly talk about that. I don't want to blame I don't think now, like maybe second weekend or something, maybe that'll be the film's fault. I don't think that the opening weekend should be negative toward filmmaker or the actors or anything. I think that this is all Warner Brothers, HBO just botched the hell out of this. I don't know what they were thinking, but it's fascinating nonetheless. I think a lot of this stuff's kind of fascinating.
People have actually called it a bomb.
No way.
Yeah, and I'm surprised. See, that's one of the reasons why I've gotten defensive about the movie is while I have my issues with it, and there was some issues where it wasn't connecting with any of us, especially the individual characters. characters and the team. Like, I don't really care about seeing this team of characters in another movie. But I like the movie itself, and it deserves to do better because it's so much better than a whole ton of other, you know, superhero movies.
I thought it was doing really well. I haven't kept up with stuff.
But like,
yeah, but fuck the tomatoes. I don't go by that shit. Well, I'm just surprised. But
it's
weird
because it's the critics like it more than the audiences do. And you think that this would be more of a audience favorite, but people aren't really necessarily responding to it the way that people thought they might.
That's crazy. That blew me away because I thought you were going to tell me, well, you know, it's doing pretty good. And that was my whole question about asking you if you wanted to see a sequel. I thought you were going to say, oh, you know, they'll probably be making a sequel.
Well, the impression that was being given was that Gunn was going to go back and do The Last Guardians, and he would come back to Warner Brothers and do some more stuff for them, potentially in the DCEU, or maybe just not do superhero stuff. He didn't have to do superhero stuff necessarily. But with this underperforming, it's almost like Guardians is something of a lifeboat as opposed to, like, you know, him coming back strong, coming home strong and stuff. Because, I mean, I thought maybe the natural progression for Gunn would be to move on and do an Avengers movie, since the Russos don't seem to be doing the next one. And there wasn't necessarily a clear heir apparent, you know, maybe Ryan Coogler since Black Panther did so well. But it seemed to me like maybe that was the trajectory he was on. And now, maybe not so much. You know, he's taking a hit from the looks of it. And I think there's plenty of you know, mitigating factors here. But the money men are maybe not looking, you know, like, he's not still looking so hot to them as he used to.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, I think. I think this is a really well-made movie. Despite problems with it, I still thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's way better than most superhero movies. But it's, again, it's the Howard the Duck factor, where the shit that maybe you and me and the guys that resonates with us doesn't necessarily resonate with a broader audience.
Yeah. I really thought you were going to tell me, well, you know, it's doing pretty good. To hear that now, it's not doing that well. Wow. That's just, wow. I'm a little disappointed by that. Because, I mean, I would like to see him do another. I don't know. It's weird because I don't know if I want to see another fucking Suicide Squad movie. That's why I was going to ask you, like, do you want to see another Suicide Squad movie?
I'd have to agree that I don't want to see, like, you know, I still, because we talked about this a few episodes back, where I still intend to go ahead and do a DCEU rewatch and be able to kind of rank them. But because we still are trying to do the X movie relaunch, I mean, check countdown before the end of this year, I want to go for, I can't do the DCEU the same year. So I'd have to be looking into 2022 or so. So, after seeing this movie, the prospect of watching Birds of Prey, which I know you've said good things about, and I've heard other people say good things about, but it's really hard for me to get motivated because I agree with you guys. I really don't care for Harley Quinn in these movies. So that's tough for me. And, you know, they killed off Flag, who, you know, like you said, I liked him a lot better in this one. You know, he's running around in the yellow shirt like he was in the comic books and stuff. Issues with how the Wall is portrayed in these movies, I agree with you that she's consistent with the way she is on the cartoons and such, but from the comic books, she's, I think, a huge departure, and so I actually really resent her representation in outside media. So to see her treated poorly in yet another movie, I kind of want the Suicide Squad to go away. I want them, if they're going to do another Suicide Squad movie, I want there to be a reevaluation of what that should be, and I want to see a different take than what we've seen so far. And it's like, how many shots do you give the Suicide Squad? Because it's not like the Justice League where it's inevitable they're going to go back and do another one. I just don't know. I kind of wouldn't mind a break from them, to be honest with you.
Wow. Okay. I'm kind of with you on that. I don't feel like, to me, Guardians of the Galaxy has connective tissue for all three movies. Hopefully the third one, there's, you know, that running theme about his mom. You know, I know the movies hit you hard just like they do me. I just don't feel that same hit with this. I thought it was a fun movie to watch, but, you know.
There was a Guardian article over the weekend that the movie was released. It was talking about how this particular author felt like this was sort of like the death knell for superhero movies, that because this movie was so self-aware and such an intentional satire of the, you know, superhero genre in general, that it was an indication, like with Westerns, how they went from the, I don't want to say Henry Fonda either, because he was one of the ones who was in one of the Turning Point movies. John Wayne, okay, where you have the John Wayne doing the iconic straight-laced Western, and then you have Clint Eastwood come in there and started doing the spaghetti Westerns and, you know, the anti-heroes and bring into question the assumptions that were made by the earlier Westerns. And, you know, you got these movies like Little Big Man with Dustin Hoffman, where it's like, oh, you remember those savages that were always raiding the camps and stuff and were just seen as like the total bad guys? Well, in fact, they had small black blankets and their land is stolen from them and their children are starving and it's all because of the white man and we're only seeing the one perspective and yada yada. So this guy was trying to say that this was like to superhero movies what those type of Westerns, those critical Westerns were to the Western genre, apparently forgetting that Westerns dominated cinema and television for like 30 years before that happened. And that's not quite where we're at with superhero movies. And they were also brought up like The Boys and some of the other ones, maybe Invincible, where now that they're being more critical and being more adult, that it's showing that the genre is moving away from the big blockbusters. And then the fact that this movie hasn't done super well financially and it seems like it has a somewhat mixed response from the audience, it's actually more of an indication that audiences aren't ready to get away from the more conventional superhero stuff yet, and they want stuff that's more family friendly, safer, essentially, than this was. I feel really defensive of this movie because I thought, you know, I'm honest with my opinions of the movie and I'm honest with my criticisms of the movie, but at the end of the day, it's a movie I do enjoy it. I do think it was fun, and I feel weirdly protective of it because it's not doing as well as I thought it should have. I feel like it should be one of those situations like Guardians of the Galaxy where everybody is like super high on it and I'm just kind of like lukewarm on it. I thought the second one was great, but I haven't rewatched the first one in full ever. I've never rewatched Volume 2. I just saw it theatrically the one time. I really enjoyed it, but I've never gone back to rewatch it again. So it's one of those where I can enjoy it and still not feel like, you know, like I've watched the Iron Man movies, the first two Iron Man movies, I don't know how many freaking times. The two Cap movies, I don't know how many freaking times, because I have either a strong connection to the movies or a strong connection to the characters in the movies. I feel like I want to keep watching Suicide Squad just to like show support because I like that it's different and weird and doesn't like have that home run for the family quality to it. I want to see more movies like this, and I feel bad that it's not doing as well as I assumed that it would given the pedigree it has and the money that was thrown at it, the promotional budget. And like, this should be the movie that I kind of snicker at like what I do with the Deadpools, where I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. But Deadpool does fine. You know, Deadpool doesn't need me to fucking support it. And I feel like kind of wanting to rally around this movie because it's just not getting where I think that it deserves to be.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, I enjoyed the movie as well. Like, I enjoyed it quite a bit. All mine are little nitpicks. Nothing that ever took me out of the movie, except Harley. She really does take me out of the movie. But everything else, I mean, I enjoyed it. I'm shocked that it's not doing as well. Like, I really thought you were going to say, oh, yeah, you know, there. Because I know that apparently WB or Warner Brothers already said, oh, he's coming back to do more movies. Like, I think they want him to be their Faggy.
For one, I just don't know if that's ever going to work. Like, they try to do that with Jeff Johns, and I think that if in the long run, that kind of hurt them. I don't think that they have a Feige in them, and I don't know that trying to do Marvel, like, again, it's the same problem that DC as a whole has. If DC's trying to do Marvel, they've already failed because Marvel's always going to be better at being Marvel than they ever will be. They got to try to be the best DC they can be, but even if they were to do that, I really don't think that James Gunn is the guy you get to head up your universe. He's the guy, you know, he's the cut-up. He's the class clown. He's the guy who is doing the little side movie that's snickering at the Avengers, like Whole Kids Table. You don't necessarily have him take on the big heroes. You don't want to see him like do Superman and shit, you know? It's like, I'd like to see him do something, and I'd like to see him do comic book movies or non-comic book movies. I've liked him since at least Slither, and I'd love to see him do more stuff like Slither. He hasn't really done much in the horror vein, and I think that's maybe his strongest area, so I'd like to see him do something more like that. Like a horror character would be really cool, where he's or comedy horror. But that's my lane. That's not necessarily the commercially viable lane. I think he likes having movies that make hundreds of millions of dollars, and I that isn't necessarily what I want from him. But this movie really needed to do that. It may not. I feel bad for him on that respect.
See, I didn't realize that. Like, I mean, I agree with you. Slither is, I think, one of my favorite. I love, even though he just produced it, Brightburn. I love Brightburn.
Yeah, and a lot of the people from Brightburn have been popping up. Like you said, his regular people that keep showing up in his movie. In the people that's going to be in Peacemaker, his handlers, aren't they from that movie?
I think so.
Yeah.
Or they make appearances. I think so. I'd have to go back and look at it again. But I like that he does those type of movies. I do some, you know, I think this genre needs movies like this to kind of cleanse the palate. Because, I mean, I'm a big Marvel fanboy, no doubt. I can't think of that many DC films that I'm just, like, in love with. You know, they have their hits and the hit and misses. But I'm just shocked that this one is not. I really thought you were going to tell me it was doing fantastic. I'm really shocked by that.
Well, and again, I think Warner Brothers thought this was going to be another one like Aquaman, where it like shows where they could go and be this huge moneymaker, and it's just not seeming to do that. So everybody thought that, you know, that this was going to be huge, and it just doesn't seem to be happening. It's, you know, maybe it's going to have legs, but and obviously there's a lot of extenuating circumstances, but it's not doing Bafo business around the world. It's not going to be in China most probably, especially now. So it's going to have to leave a lot of money on, you know, I'm not sure there's leaving money on the table because it, you know, somebody has to place that bet, and Warner placed the big bet and it seems like they're losing big on this one.
Wow, that's so disappointing.
Yeah, anyone a bummer, Tori?
Yeah, well, I will definitely buy this movie on Blu-ray and it's going into my collection.
I want to own this one. I want to see deleted scenes. I want to see, you know, hopefully they give it a bells and whistles release. They did a decent job with Justice League, even though that one didn't do very well either, and I bought Justice League, so I definitely would, especially since it's not as well received. I want to buy it just to show support.
I will agree with you on that.
We already did a full length one on our own, and the one I got is already like 210, and I was going to try to edit this for tomorrow, and it's like, as we're talking, he's like, well, I'm really enjoying this. There's no fucking way I'm getting this done for tomorrow though. So it's like, okay, well, I'll have to figure that shit out. But I'm glad we did it though, because I really wanted your perspective, and I was just really curious. I wanted to see how you responded, because I thought, again, it came out the way I thought it was going to be. I thought that you and I would be the more positive ones, and then the guys were a little bit more negative, and I wanted to have that contrast, because there's a lot to love this movie, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I definitely enjoyed it. I'm surprised they did. I thought you were going to tell me,
Yeah, especially Mac. I really thought that he would dig it more than he did. And don't get me wrong, they didn't hate it either. They just were really lukewarm and did not seem like they were looking forward to watch. Like, Fryhol said he didn't think he's going to watch it again anytime soon. He said that it was the kind of movie he would have liked like 10 years ago, but not really, you know, his jam now. And like, yeah, Mac was like, yeah, I had some drinks in me and I was totally jazzed at the beginning of the movie. And it was just like, you know, it just didn't, he lost the buzz over the course of the movie, basically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, watching my mom, we enjoyed it. And when I watched it by myself, I'm like, yeah, it's still a good movie. I mean, I would probably watch it again tonight if it wasn't so late.
This is a great background movie. Like, that's going to be a cool movie to just throw on the background and you don't have to necessarily pay attention to every scene and you just watch the parts you like and just like a chill out kind of movie.
Yeah, but the fact that they're like, oh, you know, they didn't like it that much, that just blows me away.
Yeah. I think it deserves better response. It doesn't seem to be connecting with everybody. But I think, again, I think it's the Howard the Duck factors. I think that we're both getting off on the ways in which it's not like every other movie, and they're like not getting the highs they expect from the Marvel formula kind of thing, you know, that you get from guns. So, you know, I don't know. It just is what it is. I guess it ain't for everybody. And that's the thing too, is like we talked about, we like the Shaggy Dog. We like the Strays. I take more ownership of the movie when I know that it's under love, you know?
You like the Strays, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I like slitting the throats of the sacrificial lambs. I like gutting the golden calves, but this movie's like get kicked around a little bit and I feel bad for it.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I'll definitely watch it again just to give it some love. I'm enjoying it. Yeah. I enjoyed it. So that's weird.
Yeah. Well, what I'm curious to see is if it gives them cold feet over Dune, because there's still a struggle over Dune and making sure that theatrical only, the filmmakers don't feel like they can properly lock the franchise if you've got simultaneous subscription-based streaming and shit. And I think that this might make a flinch.
They've been doing ads though on Braveheart.
YouTube?
No.
TV? HBO Max. They're doing the Dune lead-in commercials. Yeah, so they may just be like, whatever, we'll write it off or something.
But again, Warner Brothers need franchises, and DC still isn't giving them the franchises they need. They're looking at trying to release a Batman movie next March. I, at some point, you gotta just say, wait, hold up. You know, I really wonder, unless things have turned around by December, if they either decide not to put it on HBO Max. I don't think they're under any, even with the advertising, I think it'd be very hard for there to be like some sort of class action lawsuit because it didn't stream Dune for their subscribers like they showed in the advertisement. I think it'd be very foolish for them to do that. And I think that they can, you know, we'll see what happens. Maybe the HBO Max numbers are something special and it's worth it to them, but from the outside looking in, it doesn't look promising.
Yeah, I just can't see how at this point they got new HBO subscribers. You know, at this point you're just getting people signing up their free trial, right? With a new email address. I can't see somebody like, you know what? I think I'm going to sign up for this monthly service. No, I don't think that's happening right now. Anyway, like I said, very interesting. I would want to talk about that just because I happened to catch the numbers earlier today and I was just like shocked at how low they were. I thought for sure this movie was going to make, you know, like I said, if, you know, maybe 2/3 of what Black Widow made. Not even half. Oof. Anyway, DC special. Nice talking to you guys.
We think you're special for 108th Sage, Baby Skeletor, Canoes, Carlos Fopp, Chris Dunford, Chris Litton, Chris Thompson, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, Del Dracula, Dr. Angie, Dirk Ashton, who added Thanks Ours, P. Ted Moore, El Romero, Friends Talking Fantasy Podcast, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, History of Comics on Film, Iowa's Joe Crawford, Jake IMM, Jeffrey Brown, John is Watching Cartoons, Kenny Crawley Jr., KSCGSF Podcast, Martin Gray, Micah Send Aliens to Me, Mint Prairie Justice, A Greg Sanders Vigilante Podcast, Randy Caldwell, Ranger Gort, Resurrections, An Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Sean Phillips, Sesquoid, Tim Price, The Pod Crasher, Tora, Trekker Talk, and Wonder Woman, Warrior for Peace Podcast.
The preceding program is a non-profit fan production. Any copyrighted materials contained therein are believed borrowed under fair use with no copyright infringement intended. Please feel free to leave comments at the Rolled Spine Productions WordPress blog. You can also send us Twitter comments through the Rolled Spine Podcast Twitter. Thank you for listening.